Well, what about the constitutional arguments of President Trump's defense team, the historic ambiguity of impeachment precedent? On the WDL Newsline, presidential impeachment expert Dr. Frank Bowman. He is professor of law at the University of Missouri, Columbia, author, High Crimes and Misdemeanors, A History of Impeachment for the Age of Trump, again from Columbia, Missouri. All right, Professor Bowman, welcome to our show, Delaware. And your assessment of the way that the president's defense attorneys have been defending the president and their constitutional arguments.
Well, I think it's a little bit unclear how the constitutional arguments will ultimately play out, in as much as the early phases of this proceeding were devoted, first of all, to an argument about the rules on Tuesday, and the succeeding days were presentations by counsel for the House of Representatives, which is to say the managers. But I think we can ascertain that to the extent that the president has a constitutional theory, it would be something like this, that no matter what he may be proven to have done, he can't be impeached for it because, first of all, he says impeachment for high crimes and misdemeanors requires proof of either crime, which seems to be part of the point they're making and the point that Alan Dershowitz says he's going to make, or at least a violation of pre-existing law. And second of all, they're claiming that a president either can't be impeached for obstruction of a impeachment investigation at all, or alternatively, that he can't be impeached for raising at least a lot of privileges or suggestions of privileges in response to requests from the House. Let's take the first of those, which is his claim that impeachment can only be for crimes or violation of existing law. That argument is wrong. It hasn't ever been true. It wasn't true in British practice, from which we took our impeachment procedures and also the term high crimes and misdemeanors. British officials were impeached and their conduct described as high crimes and misdemeanors back to the 14th century for lots of stuff that wasn't criminal, wasn't a violation of indeed any pre-existing law. The very first impeachment of Lord Latimer in 1376 had some allegations that maybe arguably were criminal, but contained lots of stuff that had nothing to do with crime at all. Basically, they were simple abuses of power. And that precedent, which began in the 14th century, continued for another 300 years in British practice up to the time of our own founding. Lots of people in Great Britain were impeached for non-criminal behavior. And when the time came for the American framers to decide what conduct should be impeachable, they seized this phrase, high crimes and misdemeanors, which is drawn from British parliamentary practice. And they were quite clear, really, much clearer than they usually are, that when they thought of high crimes and misdemeanors, they were not thinking of crimes. For example, when George Mason of Virginia proposed this phrase, high crimes and misdemeanors, he was proposing it because he was upset that the draft at that time included only treason and bribery. One of the things he said is, well, treason and bribery wouldn't include the kinds of stuff for which Warren Hastings, a British official in India, was being impeached in Great Britain that very summer. And it's quite clear that the things for which Hastings was being impeached were not criminal. Indeed, his chief prosecutor, Edmund Burke, a famous statesman and author, was quite clear in saying that, well, all these things for which Hastings is being impeached are not criminal. They're not violations of pre-existing law so much as they are violations of moral norms, constitutional norms, in general principles, not crimes, not violations of statute. The framers knew that, and so when they chose this phrase, high crimes and misdemeanors, they were expressly adopting a phrase that extended far beyond any criminal behavior or indeed any violation of existing law. Moreover, since the founding of the American Constitution, multiple people have been impeached and sometimes convicted for behavior that was not criminal. The very first successful impeachment, the federal official, that of Judge John Pickering, was essentially for his misusing his judicial authority by making bad rulings from the bench and also being drunk and possibly insane. Many of the allegations against other federal officials over the years who have been impeached involve non-criminal conduct. In fact, it's notable that in the very few presidential impeachments we've had, attempted at presidential impeachments, only three before Mr. Trump, and all of them contained allegations of non-criminal behavior. Some of them, and this is true of both Clinton and Nixon, also included allegations of conduct that, had it been charged in a criminal court, might have been criminal, but the drafters of the articles were quite careful.
Well, Professor, if I may intrude here, do you find it fascinating and even ironic, if not hypocritical, that some of the very people that would generally talk about their faithfulness to original intent of the Founding Fathers in terms of interpreting the Constitution then seem to jump wildly away from that premise in this case?
Well, that's certainly true. Originalism, like lots of other theories of constitutional interpretation, tends to be sometimes a theory of convenience. But yeah, I think it is particularly notable that these folks are not paying attention to the clear evidence of the original intentions of the framers. And frankly, they're not paying any attention to the evidence of what's happened since. So that's a long way around of saying that the claim that high crimes and misdemeanors involves indictable crimes just isn't true. It doesn't mean what it seems to mean. It's a claim that gets raised in every presidential impeachment by the defense, and it's always wrong, but it gets raised because it sounds plausible. But the truth is that there's just is no body of expert opinion. There's no scholarship. There's no serious opinion out there that the argument that they're making is right. And frankly, if you think about it, it would be kind of daft. They're suggesting that the only occasion on which you can get rid of a president is if you can find some statute somewhere that exactly covers his behavior. And you can think of lots of occasions where you very much want to remove a president, but it isn't covered by a criminal statute.
Well, let me try this on you, Professor Bowman, and that is that there seem to be two wildly different analysis of this. On one side, the notion that if you impeach and remove Donald Trump in our highly politicized, highly divided political era, every president is going to come up for impeachment. The other side is when you look at the sum total of Mr. Trump's offenses, although admittedly not covered in this impeachment, many of the other things that he's done, if anyone should be impeached and convicted, it should be one Donald Trump.
Well, that's certainly true that Mr. Trump's engaged in a lot of behavior that would be conventionally described as impeachable. In some ways, Ukraine is the least of it. But that is the core of what he's being charged with. And the truth is that if you look at it, it is plainly of the sort of thing that a president should be impeached for. It's a tremendously serious matter. A president is abusing the power of the United States against a vulnerable foreign country, threatened with foreign invasion, in order to promote his private political interests. And that's not something for which there is any previous example at any point in our history. The slippery slope argument by the Republicans presupposes that there are lots of examples of presidents in the past doing similar things. In fact, there aren't. As far as I know, what he did here is absolutely unprecedented. And it's extraordinarily serious.
For our listeners, talking to Professor Frank Bowman, University of Missouri law professor, let me just ask you, were you at all surprised that the Chief Justice, in the early hours of the morning, came out and admonished both sides? What did you think of that? And indeed, do you expect any interjections very much from the Chief Justice?
I don't really expect the Chief Justice to do anything other than what he's been doing, which is trying to preside benignly over this and maintain, so far as possible, the reality and certainly the appearance of neutrality. I think it's a little troubling that he would choose to admonish both sides for, you know, lack of civility or what have you, since, you know, the particular occasion for it was, as I gather, you know, some very limited remark by one Democratic representative. When in fact, for something like the preceding 10 hours, the entire thrust of the Republican arguments had largely been to call names against Democratic members of the House. But this is something that judges have a tendency to do. It reminds me of a case when I was practicing law as an assistant U.S. attorney down in Miami, and the defense lawyer was doing a whole variety of undesirable things, and the judge took out after him and berated him roundly in public in front of the court. And afterward, he apparently realized that there might have been some appearance of partiality. He turns to me and he says, "That goes for you too, Mr. Bowman." And I hadn't been saying anything at all. So I think this is kind of an example of that sort of natural impetus of judges to look like they're being fair, even if it's one side that's engaging in all the bad behavior.
All right, Professor Bowman, nice talking to you and tapping your expertise on this. Appreciate the time.
Thank you very much.
All right, presidential impeachment expert Dr. Frank Bowman with us from Columbia, Missouri. He is a professor of law at University of Missouri, one of the leading impeachment law professors in the country, author High Crimes and Misdemeanors, A History of Impeachment for the Age of Trump, joined us here on Delaware.